This is HR Talk. I am the face, JC and Ricky here. You know, if you're an HR manager and you decide to put out a suggestion box, let's cut the bottom of it out and put it over top of the trash can.
Ladies and gentlemen, your weekly words of wisdom, your bi-weekly words of wisdom directly from the face of the franchise, the man on the cover art. He is the legend known as the face who has finally come to a contractual agreement to continue doing the episode introductions for HR Talk. Thank you, face of the franchise, for everything that you do for your country and this show. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I am JC up in Western New York and all the way down in sunny Central Florida, the man, the myth, the legend. He lives in different worlds of Disney every weekend, traveling from the Food and Wine Fest to the teacup ride back to your ears every drive time. It's Ricky Baez.
I wish that was true. You know how awesome that would be?
It is true. You freaking go to Disney every goddamn weekend. You live, pardon my language, but you are literally like 20 minutes away, 15 minutes away.
20 minutes, yeah.
I know. Yeah, rub it in, dick.
Whatever. You brought it up.
I know.
Talking about me rubbing it in. But you know what? But JC, believe it or not, realtors do exist in Florida. So you can contact one and have a conversation about maybe purchasing some kind of parcel in the 32801 zip code. Maybe that'll work.
Yeah, I really appreciate you hitting home and making me feel terrible about my life. Great friend you got here, Jim. Yeah, no, I know. Love this
guy.
Love
you, bro.
Great, yeah. Hey, how you been? I hear you, you're pretty stressed out lately from the reports.
Yeah, it's just a lot going on.
I got a call from your doctor.
You did?
Yeah. Number one, they said your medication's in for the scratch, so that's good.
I knew it.
Yeah, and then number two, it had something to do with, like, stress. Are you stressed? You look stressed.
Yeah, a little bit. It's been a trying couple of weeks in my day job, and nothing that can't be handled. But let me tell you, it's really, really challenging keeping it all together. But that's what I love about it. I work best in chaos.
Okay, speaking of chaos, before we invite our guest in, because he's going to have a lot to comment on this one, real quick question for you, Ricky, is have you ever been in a situation, when you're talking about stress like that, where you have had to potentially fire yourself? Have you ever had to do that? Like, have that conversation with yourself? Or do you give yourself critical reviews through the year? Like, as you're the HR guy of one? Not nowadays, but like previously, you know?
So I have, it's something similar. I have been in situations where after the event happened, I'm overanalyzing what I said. And I'm like, you're such an idiot. You should have said this or you should have said that. And I'm firing myself and punching myself in the face mentally at the same time. Yes.
We might need to work on your methods of engagement, especially when we're talking about engaging yourself.
If it works.
And listen to me. This professional that's coming up right now, he is the man, the myth, and the legend. He is the world-renowned, world-defending champion of all things engagement in the world of business and human resources. He has recently rebranded himself. He is, ladies and gentlemen, the Josh Snyder.
Yes.
Techno music. That's awesome.
I'm feeling it. How did you know? It's secretly...
We are in your phone.
I take techno remixes, and that's how I pump myself up.
We know everything in your phone. we did see your playlist. We saw the techno playlist, the Taylor Swift playlist.
Hey, man. No, Spears stop. Playlist. Stop. I can't lie. It doesn't come from, like, these jokes about sneaking on the playlist. If anyone has watched the Josh Snyder Experience on YouTube, then you would understand his appreciation for remixes. That's the end of that story, brother.
Yes, and Taylor Swift. I have a strong belief that when a new Taylor Swift album or song drops and you don't like it, you use that song as a barometer to adjust your music preferences. Because the problem's not wrong with the song. The problem is wrong with you.
It's kind of true. The world does realign around Taylor Swift. It does.
If I don't like a Taylor Swift song, that would launch me into Metallica because I'm upset with myself? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm just saying you got to realign your preferences. to the way the song is, because in 6 to 12 months you're going to be loving it anyways. So you might as well just love it right now.
You seem pretty knowledgeable about Taylor Swift music there, Josh. So
Who isn't? She's one of the hottest selling artists in the world, Rick.
Okay, got it. All right, so Josh, welcome to HR Talk. I heard a lot about you over Disrupt HR Buffalo. So why don't you tell us and the audience a little bit about you?
Well, you know, I took 5 years to get a 4-year college degree up there in Western New York, which I think that, you know, if you go to college down where you live and you take a little extra time, like that, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. When you're in Fredonia, when you get 12 inches of snow and they don't cancel and you take longer, like people, like that's not a wise thing to do.
Gotcha.
But took 5 years to get a 4-year degree, picked accounting because somebody told me I could get a signing bonus. Seems like a good, like if you're going to have a job, you might as well get a signing bonus. And
I'm sorry. Somebody said, go pursue this degree because you'll get a sign on bonus.
I mean, part one was they said you might get hired in the fall of your senior year. And I thought, well, you go to school to get a job. That seems like a good approach. And then they said, yeah. Well, and if you're one of the top few, then you might get a signing. So yeah, I picked my, sold my birthright over $3,000, which was a wise choice, and walked in day one, October 1st, 2009. Uh-huh. And by 9:23 a.m., I was thinking, what the hell am I doing here?
Go back and have a conversation with the person who gave you that recommendation. And then, like JC said, have a conversation with yourself for accepting that recommendation and fire yourself. There you go.
So I stayed 2 years before I fired myself. So, okay. But through that time, read 100 books and, you know, I honestly thought everything was wrong with me in the world. I kept trying harder and, you know, you can look up the Disrupt HR Talk. Although I will say, don't watch the Buffalo one because of this. There's so much laughter and the way that one was recorded, it's me on stage delivering this joke, if you will. Uh-huh. And then it's just me being silent for like that's not a few seconds. Mm-hmm. But it's me being silent, standing there with kind of like this little grin on my face, and it sounds like one person's coughing in the audience when in fact like everybody's laughing.
The place was like laughing. It was hysterical, but there was like zero audience miking. It happened so many times through the presentation.
I look like I'm off. I look like I'm just like me on a stage, having fun with myself.
Just me.
It's honestly like if you produce videos, if anyone has ever produced a video, you have to watch this one. Just to understand exactly what he's talking about, because without capturing any of the audience, it is like it starts funny, and after a few minutes, because you're there for five, it really starts to get a little weird, and it kind of bothers you a little bit. Like, why is he smiling at me again? What's happening here? You know?
And the way the stage was, there's people like above me to the right, like, and so I'm playing to the room, and so on the video, it's like I'm like pointing up here, pointing down there. I mean, it's just so definitely watch.
And
that
no
one.
Shot of the audience. It's just exactly. You there by yourself.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm still going to watch that now.
Yeah, during the silent parts. Yeah,
stage footage. So why not?
It was wild. Wild.
Oh, I don't know where I was. Where we? Go watch the talk for the humor. But you know, I fast forward a bunch of years and started to basically. I realized work should be fun. And, you know, not fun 100% of the time, but we perform best, started to get into a lot of like neuroscience and trying to discover like what motivates us to work, what engages us at work. And ultimately now it's pushing into how do we find meaning in our work? And one of the things we'll discuss is how we've found that 4% of our work is the part that gets the breakthrough, is the part that means the most, yet I think it's one of those techno songs that remixed. I heard them say the grass is greener where you water it. Mm-hmm. The problem is when something's only 4%, we're thinking about the 90+. And so we're missing out on our next promotion, our next advantage, our next breakthrough because of where we're focused.
So really only 4%?
Yeah. So the the tingly feeling.
Yeah.
The tingly feeling only happens about 4% of our work week. And this tingly feeling was rooted in this experience I had at the CPA firm. And one of my coworkers, she looks up at me and she goes, "Josh, I've got a tingly feeling." And I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Yeah, I've got a tingly feeling because the numbers matched." AKA Microsoft Excel gave me a tingly feeling. And I immediately was like, "Something's wrong with you."
Because that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, "Oh my God, is she okay?" My workers comp hat just came on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, "Do you need me to call 911?
Yeah. And okay, it was so just her and me in the feeling. Conference okay. room. And so, I mean, you could imagine, like, she was single, I was single, she was attractive. So when she first said that, like, my mind went one place, but.
I love this. Hold on. This is the best explanation or defense of somebody who's being investigated for sexual harassment. Rick, let me explain to you what happened. We were talking about Excel sheets, and I completely misunderstood what she meant by "I have a tingly feeling." That's exactly what it's.
I mean, listen. That's too good. This is good. Uh-huh. It's and the like, you know, sometimes this is scaring to scare me, but I've seen some research that says like 50% of our memories are made up. But I have been telling this. Now, I used to tell this story in a much weirder way when I first started speaking. But like, I've been telling this story for years, and now I'm like, ultimately what ended up happening is we realized that Jen was telling the truth once we started to push into this research, because like when you have a beer, glass of wine, some tequila, one of my personal favorites, your body releases dopamine and it feels good. And when something feels good, we want to do it again. And what we were able to realize is Jen had this moment of immense satisfaction at work. And her body flooded with dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin. And so she was actually telling the truth. And so that kind of like set us on this journey of wow, if we could find a way that somebody feels good at work and they want to repeat it, and it creates this forward momentum inside of them, like something's got to be here, because the amount of money spent on engagement, the amount of money spent on performance management, we're not seeing these things change. So instead of top down, can we help individuals get ignited, find their spark? And so that's, I got serious there. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
So you actually take the opportunity to help light that fire. That's your focus.
Correct. Yeah. And so right now the research is going deeper. We've got an assessment that is in beta. So, you know, it's not like sexy foolproof. But really trying to help people identify in their work. And so the premise is, in the way I think of it, because keep in mind, it took me 5 years to get a state degree, four-year degree. So I got to keep things as elementary as possible. But most of the times people think in terms of, I love my job or I hate my job.
Yeah.
And that gives any human being very, very few choices. Either you leave or you stay. And oftentimes when we say, you know, why do you love your job or why do you hate your job? It's usually either money or their manager. And so both of those things they don't have a ton of control over. And so we've started to push deeper into these elements. What's trying to go in behind the scenes? So for example, one of them is pace. And let's say that, you know, you step into your career and you like your job and you kind of move forward and you move up, and 7 years later, you're manager of something. And all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're kind of like, I don't think I like my job anymore. and nothing significant has changed, nothing different. And what we're able to start to realize with that person is have them walk through the assessment to identify their key motivators. And there are about 8 of these things that you've never really thought about before. And then we ask them about their current role. So let's take that person 7 years in, been pretty happy, and all of a sudden wakes up unhappy or uncertain. And we find out that in terms of the pace of their work, they prefer a little bit more of a planned, methodical, step-by-step approach to their day, to their week. And this project that they're on is frenetic and chaotic, and mean, Ricky, I think you said you like the chaos. So, you know, people like us, if things get too, like me at the CPA firm, like my next 6 months are planned out. Like, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, it does. Like, that sounds horrible
like,
to me.
Like, in 5 months, I know where I'm going to be on a Tuesday. Like, what?
Yeah.
But other people thrive off of that. And so we're trying to, like, listen, we need money to keep food on the table. So if you hate your job, how can you improve your position? How can you change? How can you begin to win? Because if you get wins, you build momentum. People feel that. You step up. You earn more. You move forward.
So as a professional in the industry, just high level down, just real quick, and I'm sorry for jumping in.
No, you're
just to help set the stage so everyone is clear. As a independent consultant, you're pushing in at independent companies, at places of employment, and helping reveal these answers for employees, for management, for whomever is contracting your services, or these are endeavors that you're doing solely on your own that anyone could turn to you for? What's the general scope that refines down into exactly what you've described so far?
If you could imagine Gandalf, but now that no, I'm not Gandalf. It was last year I got off the stage. I just, like, listen, there's times that I don't feel like I kill it on the stage. I got off the stage and I killed it. And a woman comes up to me. She's like, that was amazing. And we talk for like a minute or so. And then as she's leaving, she's like, so what do you do for a living? I was like, I clearly did not. Like,
I kind of
was paid to, to be just here.
You just saw it.
This whole thing. Yeah, this is like, what I do.
This is what I do. Right, so right. Primarily, I'm a professional keynote speaker. So conferences, HR conferences, companies, you know, whether it's I'm doing a research and development group, I'm doing an entire insurance agency next week. Like it so varies.
And you talked about that assessment, though. So this is a tool or an asset that's part of you as that speaker, as you're coming in, pushing in to help people understand and realize who they are and where they reside within this schema.
Exactly. And so that to me is like, because I'm, like I said, I'm very focused from the bottom up, because when top down is bought in and there's resources and there's consultants and trainers, like, you know, we can make a difference. And, you know, the consulting side, I deal with a lot of change and come in and we try and fix culture and make sure that the front end people, the front end users are so easily forgotten. And I'm like Braveheart, like, no, these people must feel that they have the resources. They must feel cared for. So the speaking and then the consulting is something that it's just has kind of come along over the last few years. But man, and then so then the assessment is like, how do you equip somebody for $20 to truly change their life? I mean, that's what the thinking is.
So essentially, you help people find their passion at work. Right. And or you help people have fun at work? Which one?
So I think it's a combination of both.
Okay.
From the perspective of human nature. And I look at everything from when we're feeling good, when we're desiring something, when we have momentum, it causes us and it draws us forward. Like, I think one of the challenges and why I think passion is so important is one of the challenges of engagement that we're seeing is when somebody's highly engaged, that means like one of the truest definitions is emotional commitment, emotional connection to the company, to the outcomes. And there's plenty of people that are highly engaged and are on the verge of extreme burnout because they're not getting a return. Like if I decide for whatever sick reason, I'm going to the gym and 2 weeks later after going to the gym, I look in the mirror and I see zero change. I'm like, I'm done. This is pointless because I'm not getting a return. And so I think passion is one of, you know, we have these 8 elements of engagement and we were so heavy into it and we realized people are getting burned out as we're trying to make them more engaged. We need to find these ways to get energetic returns. And listen, like when we think about what we love, JC, I'm sure you're a Buffalo Bill. Are you a Buffalo Bills fan?
Yes, sir.
So I grew up in Rochester, and now I live in Detroit. So, I mean, I've got no Lions affiliation whatsoever. Not that it would mean anything. But like, you know, you didn't become a Bills fan because it made logical sense.
No.
Your heart, your passion, this love, this zest, some part of you was just pulled in. And I mean, come on, Bills fans are, I mean, I'm like factually one of the, some of the craziest around.
And every time, mustard. Every time you mustard. Try to get out, they just pull you back in.
Right back in.
On a burning table. Yes.
So passion, I think, is so important. And like, I care about, I guess to take this up, I care about purpose, but if you hate your job or you're a high performer and you feel like, listen, I'm not performing well these last few months, like you're frustrated, purpose is like, is not what you need. You need to find a spark. You need to get some momentum. And so if we can find a little bit of that passion and unlock some of that, somebody can step into to maybe who they are.
So what do you do in a situation where you are working with a client and then you find out that some of their team members, they've been around for 30 years, they've been unhappy for 30 years, but they want to continue working there unhappy just because they're complacent. So how do you attack that type of person? Well, not situation, not person. Don't attack nobody, right? but how do you tackle that issue, right?
With these two weapons at the end of my arms
and words, sharp words,
semicolons till the eyes
sun sharp down. Words.
And I throw all of my unsold books at them.
How are you going to throw two books at a guy and hurt him? Come on, Josh. Come on.
Today is amazing with print on demand. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to have to write a book. Like, if my mom didn't buy 100 copies of my first ever book, I would still have 1,875 copies of that first book. Now, the third one has done much better, but.
Gotta love moms, man.
Yeah.
they are your biggest fan. That's awesome.
So I'm trying to avoid the question, but
yeah, I know.
All right. So to reiterate, Ricky, you're saying that someone is unmotivated. They kind of, they're stuck and they don't want to go anywhere. And you're okay. Tell me.
Not really unmotivated. It's okay. More. So I have seen some people that I'm using my words. Got you. Thank you. I've run into some people in my career that they're just pissed off at the world. They hate their job, but because they've invested so much time in that career, they're complacent. They don't want to go anywhere else, right? And it doesn't matter how you communicate with them and you explain to them what kind of purpose and motivation. They're like, I got 2 more years to retirement, bud, leave me alone. So how do you navigate those waters?
It's mind numbing, and I don't know if there is one answer. I do think even a lot of times I get asked to speak about millennials, and sometimes I struggle with it because I'm like, listen, millennials are human beings that just grew up in a different environment. Yep. That has kind of shaped their
identity. Through no fault of their own.
Listen, I'll raise two hands for this millennial, but those individuals who are stodgy, if you will, their identity is so buttoned up in who they've become that I think the shift or the new possibility, or they've just, you know, they've seen the ups and downs too many times that they're just like, listen, I'm like you said, I'm going to ride this one out. And I struggle to conceptualize it in terms of how do we work with that person? Like it's so hard to say when it's that direction because we feel that person versus a young millennial. We're like, well, maybe we can understand where they're coming from and then we can begin to influence them. And I mean, I was launching a software product and I had one of these people corner me in somebody's cube. And her opening line was, how many effing beers did you drink when you made this system? Now, I did not make the system.
Case and a half.
Yeah. There you go. And it escalated. My favorite line of hers was, oh, I'm about to get my waders on because it's getting real deep over here. And you know, in that moment, like there was all, every part of me that wanted to like engage, but I just kind of had to understand where she's coming from. She's been with this legacy system for 20 plus years. This is a new system that changes the way that she does it. And in her identity is under attack. And I think, you know, I don't have a clear answer for how somebody navigates that, but if we can somehow, some way build empathy for that individual, which is so hard when we work alongside them and want to knock them out the 14th floor window, hoping they land casually, just, but that's maybe they're gone for two, maybe really they just specific, need to take 2 weeks man. Off.
Yeah. You know, that was kind of vague.
There's a case of Josh's books down there that they landed on. So they're safe. But like, I mean, I feel like we're talking real and like, that's real. Like, people at work can upset you to that degree that you would like, if I could run them through a wall, I would. And it's those people. And Josh's answer is build greater empathy.
But you just answered, I don't know if you think you did, but you just answered the question, right? Because you said when you start talking to somebody, when they feel their identity is being attacked, that's the answer. So you attack, no pun intended, that situation the same way you would have a conversation with somebody with politics or religion. Because the reason that's such a hot topic is because outside of politics and religion, it could be about, I don't know, just anything. Business wise, it's okay to disagree because that's not their identity. But as soon as you say, no, that viewpoint is wrong, then they feel the identity is attacked. That's what's such a touchy subject. So
what about this? I mean, if you approach it from a different perspective, though, what if when something like that begins to happen, instead of heading down any of those paths, you just throw a sign up that says core business and you turn your back and just keep doing the real work while everyone else is complaining over the water cooler. And then you get the work done and you go home and you disengage and you have beers with your real friends.
But that creates the issue that Josh is talking about that's making him so much money because they keep calling him because that's a horrible environment to work in, right?
What's horrible about it? The people arguing with each other or the fact that you want to do your job?
No, the fact that there's an environment that you have to go to work, ignore everything, do your job, and come back home.
Well, you don't have to ignore everything. You just throw up a sign that says core business. And then anytime it flares up, you just point at the sign and smile. And go back to work. You know?
So again, so that to me, that's a horrible place to work. You spend one third of your day at work. It should be enjoyable, right?
I'm going to change my emoji on Zoom to say core business. And when stuff like this happens, I'm just going to turn my camera off and it's going to say core business on the screen. And I'm just going to go back to
talking. Yeah, I'll go back to monitoring you like I do any other time. So we're good.
Just wave
it's okay. We should ignore you. Like, we will ignore that person.
So to that then, I'm sorry, Rick, you do have more post-nominals than anyone in the room. Back to you.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that it's to me, because I wanted to get your perspective, Josh, because you've done this a bunch of times. I've done this at work too, but not as a consultant, as a manager, right? And I've had to have conversations with people who have been around from the legacy days, quote unquote, and they don't want to see the train make a shift. But now I have to have the conversation with them and say, look, we're going left. Whatever left means, that's where we're going. And I need to understand. No, I need to make sure you understand where the organization is going, and not because I'm pushing it down your throat, because I really want you to take it all in and to let me know if you want to be a part of this new direction.
And to that, Rick, just like you said in the show with Laura Geminder a couple weeks ago, left is where the sun sets.
That's right. Yes. Left is where the sun sets. Remember that, kids. So it's just listen to the show. It's ridiculous. So I guess what I'm trying to find out from you is if what strategies do you have for those, I guess I want to call them naysayers, but for the ones that they're on road and ROAD, retired on active duty. They're there, but they're not there. They just coast in it. They hate their job. They hate their life. The only thing they love is making everybody else around them miserable. So you got a client who says, hey, make my team better. So he's giving.
Ladies
he's
and gentlemen,
hiding.
You cannot see the video, but just like Homer Simpson moves into the bushes, Josh has slowly moved off the screen.
I love it.
Next question, please.
Hey, he can say next question. Go to a different topic. Give
no,
me something
no, no,
else.
No, no, no.
Oh, okay, right, what's okay, your favorite right. cheeseburger? Oh, okay. All right, let's go back. All right, good.
And I said when we were chatting beforehand, I said, listen, I don't have all the answers. And I don't. Like, this is a situation that's just – it's real. And, one approach is JC's approach. And you can just get stodgy on it and give it right back. I think
– But what kind of environment does that create?
It's horrible. It's horrible. Yeah. And it's not something that people want to be a part of. This is not an answer, but when you went from middle school to high school, that transition was severe at the time, but you figured it out. And it actually ended up generally speaking, it probably ended up being just fine. The transition.
Well, except for Ricky's 5 years at middle school, like your college experience.
Six. Get it right. Six.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Which takes more effort. And then high school to college. It's a tough transition, but
it is.
You figured it out. Like, and I think that somewhere along the way, people forget that they are resilient to, you know, you've made it this far. And I mean, in reality, that person has literally parked the car. And when the car's in park, it's like you can't just steer left or right, and then you get scared. And so I don't know, because it probably is uniquely personal to each of those individuals. And I mean, there's one of my clients, there's a woman that started giving away her work clothes 6 months before retirement.
Oh, wow.
Because she's like, I will never need these again. And in my mind, I'm like, how did this, like, why wasn't she like, What?
Where's her manager? And what does her manager say about it? Right. And why is her manager isn't doing anything about it?
I mean, like, and I don't know. There is, in my opinion, there is no one strategy. I'm 34 years on this earth, so.
It's got to be difficult as a consultant. Because you have to deliver the person who paid you that money to right. make the team right. Now you got to tell them these three got to go. And what if those three are high performing people? They just are really toxic. So it's got to be tough. JC, you got a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not so much a question as much as it is, if we think back to what Josh was talking about in the beginning, leading up to this point in the program, it sounds as if when we're focusing on building that fire, igniting that flame, that spark, we're increasing engagement in the workplace through that process. Isn't it plausible that if you take a look at the overall umbrella of increasing employee engagement, regardless of what the specific scenario is, the goal is to then elevate the entire floor of discord or lower the floor? You know what I mean? Eradicate.
No, I get you. I get
through you. Elevation of the entire workplace mm-hmm. through engagement. Why is it that engagement is so lacking?
I mean, if I was to step outside of the specific of like, how do we address that person? Like what you're saying is like a rising tide will lift all boats. Mm-hmm. And my other direct answer would absolutely be like the fact that a manager or a leader has let something like this exist for too long, or honestly, there maybe that person outgunned a few managers in reality is what ends up happening. Mm-hmm. And that somebody doesn't have the air cover to at least sit that person down and say, hey, we're trying to do something here.
Yeah.
I can a culture shift even though that person's there? Yeah. Like when you're speaking, you don't want to chase down just that one bad apple. You want to continue to go with the group that's feeling you and surging with you. But it's a tough, tough thing. And we can understand where we're coming from. We can have empathy. I mean, but gosh, that person has blazed their gun so many times. It's like, screw you. Like, yeah. I mean, I have this individual that, so when I was trying to, you know, after I left the CPA firm, went into project management, got into this industry 7-8 years ago. And for up until 3.5-4 years ago, had to work in the restaurant to keep food on the table.
Yeah.
And there's a woman that I worked with to this day. I'm so glad I had, her name's Tammy, whatever. I could this day could think about putting a steak knife in Tammy's tire in her car. It's horrible. And I like, I love people. Like, I'm the guy that's like, as a leader, we need to love people. Yet Tammy got under my skin so much. And so I think if somebody could get under my skin that much, and then I would like still to this, like 4 years ago, like if I had the chance, like I might still just put a steak knife right in the.
So hold on, I really hope for everybody listening, I really hope that Tammy didn't get that happen to her that you don't know about it, Josh, that you just admitted to. So, all right. So
I have not put a steak knife. I'm just as an example of a way somebody could feel. I not say like put somebody out of the 14th example. Floor?
Hypothetical well, example.
It's got real.
Pushing somebody off a building is nothing. A steak knife into a tire.
That costs money to fix.
All right, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, I do have a clip I want to play for you at this time. This is directly from the website joshschneider.com.
But my challenge to you is this. Over the next 52 weeks, how can you put 25 decisions into play? Can you activate somebody once a week? Can you have a meaningful conversation? Can you unleash the potential of somebody who works for you, who does not yet see it for themselves, yet you see it for them?
So right there at the beginning of the clip that you're going to find directly on your website, in that 23-second burst right there, we're talking about elevating that person. We're talking about igniting that flame. We're talking about engaging, I believe is the word that you said, right? Break this down just a little bit further. What do you mean? Explain it to Ricky, if you could.
Just to me, nobody just, else.
just to the simple-minded person who lives where it's warm.
That's right.
While you and I have coats on inside. So the premise of that clip is – you know, I'm saying over the next 52 weeks, because people get fired up and they're excited. They're like, okay, I can go and I can lead. I can help improve my people. And then that person that you want to put the steak knife in their tire actually still works for you. Like, congratulations, you're fired up with me today. You're going to get on a plane. You're going to go home tomorrow and they're still going to be there. And so it's about trying to convey this message of like, if every other week you could make one shift, one little subtle change. You know, if we were to take an hour and all get together and talk about culture, would that be good for our organization? But probably. If we were all to sit down and take an hour and talk about employee engagement, would that improve our engagement? It might give us some ideas. We might realize it's something we need to do. But if I, as a leader, take 1 hour and sit down with one person, could that forever make their life better? Could that forever make their working relationship with me better?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like part of that premise of just, where are we going to commit our time? Because we're all so busy. We're all so stretched. Steve Wynn, the founder of Wynn Casinos, he said, when you can do something for somebody that they cannot do for themselves, you hit the bullseye in human relations.
Mm-hmm.
And I firmly believe that. I mean, you know, if we're talking leader HR perspective, it's like we should have a little, listen, unfortunately, we're in the weeds too much, but we should have this foresight to be able to speak life into somebody, to lift them up. I mean, it's astonishing how little encouragement so many people get. And then to think that when you come to work, the individual that you work with could lift you up. The person tasked with being responsible for you is speaking life to you. And I know it's so crazy, but we've in 2017, the HeartMath Institute found more signals are sent from the heart to the brain than from the brain to the heart, which says, what is truly driving my performance? How I think or how I feel?
So, when finding that balance on what you think and what you feel, this is what I see managers struggle with. because I have seen some leaders in my time that they either they focus way too much on moving the needle from A to B and they forget about the human part, or they focus on the human part too much and they forget about moving the needle from A to B. So now it's been my experience that it starts at school. If you go and you get a business a business degree or an MBA, anything like that, they focus so much on the numbers and making sure it happens that when you actually get to that workforce, that's what you focus on. And you don't really start thinking about the managing the human aspect, the human capital, until the HR guy comes into your office and tells you, hey, you can't talk to people that way. So it's if you're going out there to get that college degree solely on business, it would behoove of you to start focusing on some HR classes as well to kind of help you with that. So with that said, have you ever been in a situation when you had a manager that just focused so much? Now, he or she really does a good job because they move the needle from A to B, but they have so much laser focus on that they forget about the person. How do you approach that?
I mean, results are beautiful and we need results. Mm-hmm. And that's, meaning it's like, My tagline is meaningful work that moves the needle on work that matters most, because both of these things need to be present.
Yeah.
But as we, you know, one of the core tenets of millennials and now Generation Z is that their heart matters so much more than previous generations. 60, 70 years ago, having a job is what mattered. 40 years ago, having a decent job is what mattered. 20 years ago, having a good job. Now it's like, wait, I want to work somewhere that matters to me. And so we are in a little bit of a different environment. For that manager that is so focused on results, I think you just have to ask a couple layers of questions about how they feel about their people and how they think their people feel about them. From there, you can gauge, you know, are they completely oblivious or do they realize they're driving results? And oftentimes with that leader, I mean, Steve Jobs is a classic, incredible leader of an organization, incredible innovator, but
an incredible tyrant as well.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of his legacy, like he was loved, but he was loved because the edges were perfect on the design.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know,
So I find it interesting that you use Steve Jobs as an example, because to me, he's the anomaly. Sorry. So to me, he's the exception, because he was such an a-hole, but yet he struck that balance. He was something off the charts that he was such an a-hole to people, but people still love working for him because they were passionate. They had a purpose and they knew what that vision was, right?
Yeah.
So he got away with a bunch of stuff that other people in corporate America would get fired for. Yeah. So in fact, he did get fired because he got let go by his own company, and then they brought him back in 2000. So it's interesting that you bring him up with that. What other analogies would you use? What other leaders?
That's a good point. And for me, when I look at like the modern CEO, if you will, in some ways, like Gary Vaynerchuk for me stands out. It was kind of funny from the perspective of he has as of a couple of years ago, it was about $100 million company, which is incredible.
Yeah.
But on your drive from your home to your work, how many $100 million companies do you pass? Plenty, probably. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's like we know about this CEO of a, I'm not saying it's a small company, but in global scale, a small company who takes time to meet with every single one of his employees because he thinks that matters the most. And, you know, he might be another polarizing example, but when it comes down to like talent, and when we look over the next 5 to 10 years with the workforce shrinking, with automation, AI continuing to replace some roles, how people feel is going to matter more than ever. Because when we look at how it is that we are creative, and here's what's interesting, when somebody's in fear-based, then the resources in their body and their brain in specific, they go to the hindbrain, which is fantastic and beautiful when you're being chased by a bear, a lion, you need to stay alive. But yep. when that manager comes to you and is constantly out of fear, like they will get results and they will drive because we have this fear. We have this narrow focus. And so if that leader like Steve Jobs crafts a perfect, beautiful, huge vision, and we see, and they're so tyrannical and this needs to happen, this needs to happen, this needs to happen. I'm just having to make this happen one way or another. But when we live in that hindbrain, we miss out on that creative, that those innovative thoughts really, which exist in the forebrain. And so great leaders, everyday great leaders who find a way to show a little bit of love, show a little bit of care, lift somebody up, they're allowing their people to step into that. And I think that is just, you know, everyday simple people all across this globe are incredible leaders because they found that they can care. Now, how do we also help that manager, that leader, make sure that they're driving results as well?
Well, there's that balance, right? that balance is there. And I find that funny because it's we tell leaders all the time, never make a business decision based on emotion. Make sure you get the data to back it up. Hmm. And when you tell them that, for some reason, they tend to think, all right, I don't have to use my feelings for anything, right? Including my employees. Like, no, that's not what the hell I said. Right? I'm just said to make a decision. But don't forget, when you make that decision, in order to make that needle, especially if you're a leader of people, if you want to move that needle from A to B, you have to care about what the employee feels or how he or she feels to help move that needle.
Question for you both then, talking about that. At an organization, employees, are they an expenditure or are they an asset?
Yes and no.
No. It's are they an expenditure? Are employees one of your greatest assets, or do you view them as an expenditure?
Yes and no. It depends.
Yeah, no, I heard you the first time.
But you keep asking.
Well, exactly, because you're dodging it. And I understand it's already yes and no. But I want to drill in on this because it's very important. Because at the end of the day, a lot of employers, they're going to tell you straight up that employees are our greatest asset. And they're going to continue to pump that down your throat. And then as time goes by, and you look at the goals of an organization and the goals of a leader, and you compare those to the goals of the employee that wants to come in and they're looking to find value and contribute and be valuable at the same time. And they're pumped up to view and think and feel that they are an asset. But we continue to show them on an expenditure line, no matter what, at the end of the day, their salaries and their training, it lays on the expenditure line. And we treat sometimes, depending on where we are within the organization, employees as tools. We treat the people as tools of the organization that we use to achieve the goals. And those are sometimes the people that when they come into the realization that, okay, it's just food for fodder at the end of the day, pumping me up to understand that I am one of your greatest assets, but I truly am just an expenditure and the salary isn't aligning, and they wind up leaving it the first chance that they get.
So
because the investment's not being made into them as an asset and being viewed as more of an expenditure.
There you go. And that's what I'm saying, yes and no. I'm saying yes because the people who are performing for you, they're an asset. The people who are costing you money is an expense.
But globally, I mean, within your organization, across the board, treating everyone equal and fair, they're all assets at the end of the day. And then it's up to you to cultivate your assets to then elevate the overall floor, right?
I don't know if I agree with that. I agree that if you elevate the water, all the boats come up. Fine, I get that piece, right? But I also want to make sure that if you're spending enough time with your rock stars, you have to spend equal or if not more time with your low performance. So you can help them make a decision. Do you want to be on board or do you not want to be on board?
So you're treating them like an asset then?
You do, but right.
Just
are
like
they
you
an
do
asset,
everyone else?
It's the question. But are they an asset?
That's my question to you.
It depends
and you said
on
yes
them.
And no.
Yes, because if they're not performing and they're not giving you return on investment, if you pay that person $100,000 a year and they're producing $25,000 a year, you're in the hole $75,000. That's not an asset.
Who's that on?
It's a deficit. That is on the employee if the manager is doing the right thing. Because the manager, the leader can only do so much. The employee still has to make the decision to either stay and do good or not do good, and one or two things would happen after that. They'll self-eject, or they'll be voluntarily taken out.
Josh, I've rolled out the red carpet for you. Please come back.
So many notes here. Mm-hmm. For one, that employee that's only providing $25,000 of value, I would believe that they are not internally satisfied with that because they know that. But they don't. Now we go back to I love my job or I hate my job, the extremes, and we have very few ways. Oh, I might read a book, or I might I don't know what to do, and that's where we're trying to find, you know, like my friend's a sommelier, and when we taste wine together, he's like, taste the green pepper. I'm like, nope. He's like, no, the back right, the base of your tongue. Taste. He's like, sip it again. That's green pepper, and I'm like, ooh, okay. Oh, that is green pepper. And so the same thing with work, we need to help. You know, my one daughter who's 2.5, she's brushing her teeth by putting the toothpaste on and putting more toothpaste on. And
that's my kid. Awesome.
And I'm standing there. I'm like, Harper, what are you doing? And she looks up at me, and I realized her older sister, Brooklyn, was the one that taught her how to brush her teeth. And so I'm like, okay, I had to show her what brushing her teeth actually meant.
Yes, yes.
And I think so, like, I mean, listen, it's sometimes people, I keep a sign up on my desk at one of my clients that says we need to focus on performance, not focus on training, because it is so simple to look at somebody and be like, oh, we need a training for this. And
it's like,
do we need a training or do we just need an email? Or do we just need a conversation? Like, we don't need $40,000 worth of resource to build a training for one person. So there's that. And I think, like, JC, I love where you were going with that. And one of the things that popped into my mind was, like, when you think about like a high school that has a specific sport, football, basketball, soccer, that they just excel in. I mean, I know in some high schools you can recruit, but like generally speaking, you can't.
Right.
And it's like their program year after year after year after year after year is just competing, 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 competing. And it's like, how are they doing that? The water is not different there. Mm-hmm. What's different there is the expectation in the program.
Yep.
And because the expectation is a certain way, everybody aligns to that. And now that gives the leadership, the coaches, the ability to go further down and say, this is how we do things here. And that's like the power of culture. And so culture is a buzzword. It's trendy. It's powerful. It's misunderstood. And that's where, like, man, you've got to try and shape culture, because if you can create the expectation, you know, let's flip away that negative side of these people who've been there for, let's go to like just a thriving work environment where people show up, and now someone who's getting paid $100,000 is providing $300,000, $400,000, mm-hmm. $500,000 worth of value. Like, now, like, there's those environments that are so exciting. And so it's one of the, to maybe sum this up, is one of the questions I've learned to ask is, I'll ask a leader, would you rather have your people love you or would you rather have your people fear you? And the first time I asked this question was my second job, the CEO, he said that, and he said fear. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I mean, it was not uncommon to have this guy kick the door in and literally start mother effing everybody. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you need the context. And so now that's a question that I can use, and it blows my, why would anyone answer fear me? Yet the people who, that's their, it's just the way they see, like, these glasses help me see the world. they don't necessarily see it as right versus wrong. And like, if you ask me that, like, love me, I'll figure out a way to motivate them. I'll figure out a way to engage them. I want them to love me. like fear me. I don't want somebody to, if I have somebody come to work and that's my, I'm so polarizing. So the fact that somebody would even entertain that question is very telling to me and how it is they want to run their organization or run their team.
You rather have people love you though? I mean, I get the question. I'm not saying that I'd rather have people fear me. Because if you was to ask me that question, I'll say none, to be honest. I because here's why. I rather focus on creating an environment that people feel fulfilled. And so if that question was asked, I'm like, none. I rather focus on creating fulfilling an environment that's fulfilling for the employees. And then if they decide to stay, then the love comes, right?
I mean, that's the Steve Wynn quote. You've done something for somebody that they couldn't do for themselves, and now you've hit the bullseye in human relations. Mm-hmm. There's this connection that is so compelling. Like I might leave one day for a better job, but because I respect you, because I have love for you or respect for you, that's maybe not love. Like, hey, let's come over for dinner on Friday and drink my favorite wine.
That, love contract.
You know,
there you go, JC. You missed it.
Man. Actually, no, I've got something very special for you both. Just hang on one second.
Hey, girl. Maybe we can hang out. Have a RC Cola to Moon Pie. My place.
That's the official model for the HR Talk podcast, the face of the franchise. So I get what you're asking, Josh. The reason I'm kind of going down that road is because I know a particular manager two jobs ago who his entire team loved him. And the reason his entire team loved him is because he didn't do shit. He did nothing for them. He just let them come in, play on the internet, do all this. Oh, we love Bobby. Bobby's the best manager ever. Why? Because he lets us do anything. Now, obviously, that was the director's fault who didn't hold Bobby accountable, right? Mm-hmm. But they loved him. So.
Yeah. But that's Bobby.
Yeah. That's Bobby.
And.
That's not his name, by the way.
Bobby got to that position. Tammy. He's probably an only child like I was. Needs people to love him, affirm him. I know I'm saying this jokingly, but like, I mean, that's just bad. Like, that's just bad.
Trust me, it sucks. Trust me, because that was so hard to clean up. 20 people on that team. And then the only thing worse, the only thing harder, I'm sorry, than creating a culture is shifting from a negative one to a positive one. Yeah. It's so hard, right? Because if you don't have a culture, you don't have an identity, and you're clinging to everything, right? But if you have a culture that you want to shift from, everybody's clinging to what it was before, and it's harder to make that shift.
Especially when people had unlimited freedoms.
Yeah, dude.
when just a little bit of structure comes into play, you've got to find a way to somehow honor the, I don't want to say the legacy, because that's usually a positive thing, but you have to try and find a way to honor the legacy of the way things were done. Because if you come in and just lay down the hammer like Thor, like you lose them. And it's like, you're like, why? We're going to start doing work now. But, and that even comes for me, like my approach with love versus fear, like I got to come in and say, hey, listen, I know it was this way. We're going to try and go this way. Like I think it speaks to your approach and that you're realizing this is a human being in front of you. Like if that person was 3 years of age and went missing, guess what? The town would shut down. Yeah. Helicopters, police from all around. People would take time off from like walking through fields. But a 32-year-old or a 47-year-old that comes and goes like a zombie, and we're like, oh, Frank's an idiot. When Frank was 3, if Frank went missing, millions of dollars would have been committed to Frank. And now we're like, Frank's an idiot. And yeah, like life's – listen, I'm not saying that everybody needs the red carpet rolled out for them every day at work, but like, somehow can we build that empathy inside of us, especially if we're going to be a leader, especially if we're trying to step into HR, which means, unfortunately, we see more than we want.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to HR Talk with Josh Schneider. pro expert at engagement, at igniting that fire, at getting your culture shift going, getting you thinking a little bit different. Josh, I'm going to throw something at you real quick. This is a this is from January 15, 2020 from techfunnel.com, best employee engagement strategies. And I've got a list here for you. I want to know what you think about what TechFunnel says are the best strategies to increase employee engagement in the workplace. One, create a safe place for employees to voice their concerns. How do you feel about that one?
I mean, I think it's if the workplace has grown up in an environment where their parents talked to their teachers for them, yes, there needs to be a place where they feel like they're validated. And I know I'm being a little undertone in my voice, but that goes back to like, if I don't feel like you care about me, but is 6 out of 10. Is that an answer?
Good to go. Six out of ten. On that. All right, Ricky, number two on the list goes over to you. Promote team bondage or bonding. Promote team bonding. How do you feel about that one for increasing employee engagement in your workplace?
For clarity, I am all for team bonding.
Very good.
Absolutely. There should be if you manage or you lead a group of people, you got to take some time out for team building, and that you don't talk shop and you just focus on the team aspect. Yes, absolutely.
And by the way, as we ping pong back and forth on these, if one of you disagrees with the other, just jump right in. Just jump right in and fight. It's good. First rule about Fight Club, there's no Fight Club. Third one on the list right here, mentor your employees. Josh, thoughts?
Oh, 100%. Individuals of a certain generation were like, I earned my right to meet the client. I earned my right to get this far. Individuals of a younger generation, we joke that they want to be the CEO in 2 years. However, can a mentor help create an experience for them, give them insight, give them that kind of like, this is what the chef in the kitchen is doing. This is what this looks like. Absolutely. 100%.
Number four on the list, Ricky, over to you. Pat your employees on the back.
Yes, I will give credit when credit is due. Absolutely.
Number five on the list.
I'm not touching anybody.
Reward team efforts and results, Josh.
How long of a pat is okay?
Good job.
High on the back before engagement in HR start?
Right?
Yeah, right. Like, before your TV show is canceled, you're fired. You're not allowed to write an article again for any future magazines. Cancel
exactly.
Culture. Got it. Yep. Rewarding team effort and results, though. Number five on the list of how to increase employee engagement in the workplace.
So nothing begets winning like winning, and it can't be the only thing, but I've become very obsessed with the difference between momentum and motivation. Motivation expires, momentum can build, and winning helps. Now, as an entrepreneur, I have had to believe for many years that I oftentimes have to focus on my efforts and detach from the outcomes. And so I want to instill effort, but also sometimes effort and results clash because you don't always get your outcome that you want. That gap can sometimes produce burnout. So I think that like when it comes to the performance and driving, I'm back to a 10. I'm easily excitable with engagement studies. 10 out of 10.
No, but wait, but dude, that was spot on though. I mean, because a lot of people focus so much on the outcome and they completely ignore the mechanisms that got them there to begin with.
Yes.
Right? So spot on with that. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Once again, this is techfunnel.com, employee engagement, best strategies to move forward and improve that employee engagement in the workplace. Number six on the list, Ricky, promote health and wellness.
Yes. Promote it. Make sure you encourage it. Be careful you don't overdo it, and now you're making your team hate you because you want to do burpees every freaking morning.
Well, here's a question for you: if you're going through the opportunity of of promoting the health and wellness, and maybe you do have like a gluten-free vegan food day, right? Do you then also have to equal and fair accommodate the capabilities of having a bacon day or a all white meat day? Like, where do you draw that line?
I'm not even going to answer.
I will discount my fee 90% if I can come speak on bacon day.
Wow, dude. 90%.
You heard it here first, awesome. Ladies and gentlemen.
I was going to say 70, but he beat me, man. He beat me. So, yes, health and wellness is important. I do a horrible job with my team because we eat out a lot. A lot. So, yeah, I got to do better with that on my team.
Going down to number 12 on the list. This is over to you, Josh. Focus on attitude and traits, not always talent.
I don't know how it slipped to number 12.
right?
Probably because it's not sexy to be like, hey, you need a checkup from the neck up. Yeah. If somebody has a bad attitude. But I have this running theory that when somebody makes a mistake or somebody underperforms, our gut feeling subconsciously, how we feel about them has everything to do with their attitude on a daily basis. So
I would agree with that.
Yeah. It's listen, you have a good attitude and you can probably get away with underperforming for quite a while, especially if you're in a large organization. Yeah. But in terms of driving engagement, helping somebody fix their attitude.
Yeah.
I'm bobbing in the water. Not Lake Erie though.
We've got a 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yep,
yeah. I can. Yeah.
Gotcha. Ricky, number 18 on the list, moving further down, skipping quite a few. 18 on this list. This is from techfunnel.com. Best ways to engage your employees in 2020. Don't monetize your rewards.
Don't monetize them?
It states here, one of the basic needs of humans is the need to be appreciated. Find creative ways outside money to reward your employees for work done, and they will find more productive ways to improve the workplace. Do not monetize your rewards.
I would say yes, with a caveat. Yes, don't monetize your rewards, but reward your employees in the way they want to be rewarded. And the only way you're able to know that is if you get to know them at the human level and you know what motivates them. It's not 100% monetized.
Like, what's more valuable, $100? Well, what's more meaningful, $100 or a 6-pack of my favorite beer that I mentioned one time? That's powerful, right?
That's strong.
That's because, powerful.
Because,
strong.
Yeah, because the beer itself isn't what they feel like, oh my God, this is awesome. It's, holy shit, he remembered.
Yes, exactly.
He remembered this. Yeah.
We're going to go straight to number 21 on the list. Josh, this one's over to you. It states, remember and celebrate anniversaries, weddings, and accomplishments.
I think so. I mean,
It kind of goes hand in hand with your beer analogy right there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like you've got to, right? I mean, I made sure that I got married on I got the choice to be married on 2/4 or 2/11 or something like that. And I was like, I can do 2/4 because I can remember 2 and 4. Thank God my birthday's on
marrying.
Winter solstice. So it's like everyone's like, oh, it's winter solstice. I'm like, It's my birthday. So those things are hard. And, you know, like, don't just post on Facebook. You know, you don't have to spend $100 to make it. But especially to a lot of people, those moments feel actually somebody at my clients, I don't know, I'm making this way too long. She told him, she goes, I don't really celebrate the seasons or any holidays anymore. And it's like,
really?
Like, work has crushed her soul so heavily. And I just say that to the extent of maybe, like, as a manager, as a leader, by saying, you know what? No, you are special. You truly are. Even if it's just this day on the jovial thing for your birthday, could that be that something that could pick somebody out of the situation of the mud that they feel like they're in?
And if I could put a caveat to that, it goes back to what I said earlier. You got to get to know your people. Yeah. Don't just celebrate them, right? Because if you got two or three people on your team that are Jehovah's Witness, they don't do birthdays. The second you come out with a cake, parties and everything at all, you're going to have issues on your hand that you otherwise wouldn't have done have you gotten to know your employees.
Also, my cake needs to be gluten-free keto. So thank you.
With bacon.
Yeah.
Number 31 on the list, hire from the inside first. Ricky.
Ways to hire from the inside first.
Ways to improve employee engagement, techfunnel.com. Number 31 on this list, hire from the inside first.
Yes. What that does, if you hire from the inside, it creates a sense of belonging. It tells your employees that, okay, there's upward mobility for my career here, but I don't want the leaders to just throw that out there and just, wait, we're going to hire from the inside. We have a good gauge on what the aptitude is for our employees, but we got to hire from the inside first. Let's do that. So what I say is hire from the inside. If you have trained your employees for that next position, if you have that gap, you're going to have to go to the outside, but you also have to focus on what your succession planning is like.
Very exciting. Really? Strong words from a strong man, Ricky Bias, everyone.
Thank
Moving
you.
On Appreciate down it. The list just a little bit further over to number 33.
How many are there?
There's 35.
This is incredible. I have it's never seen list. A list this long.
Right? Me neither. It's unbelievable. That's why I skip so many, Josh. There's too many to read, you know. 33 on the list, Josh. This is let your staff determine their own dress code.
GM's CEO says in two words, the dress code, dress appropriately. I will say that business casual is a creativity killer for me. So I dig it. I think it's something somebody needs to feel before they go to a company. So I'm going to give it high scores for me personally. I will also say completely unfounded in research at all, just my experience. Starbucks quality of their baristas 5 years ago to today has dropped considerably. Starbucks used to be very strict with the uniform. I don't think Starbucks has lacked on their training. I can't imagine that they have. One of the major changes is now individuals can wear almost whatever they want. And I think they still have to wear the apron.
The apron, yeah.
And so this is just like, you know, we all have like these running like theories in our mind. And so for me, it's so important. But I look at that and maybe did it take the structure of a precise machine? And I am not saying that that's the issue. But I have certainly noticed a decrease in quality of the individuals at or of the experience at Starbucks.
So you just said something that's really interesting. You said that business casual dress code kills creativity?
For me, absolutely. It's so
how?
Boring.
Tell me how. That's interesting. Because it's boring.
Well, like make me wear a suit or like let me like smart casual is my favorite. Jeans and a shirt, like jeans and a sport coat. Like if you want to look, I'm not talking like, you know, your New England Patriots hoodie from 1842, but
the Civil War.
Yeah.
That kind of hoodie.
I'm pretty sure they didn't have the NFL back then, but like even a t-shirt with like a smart looking hoodie, like and if that's what somebody wants to wear, I feel like it, I'm all about alignment and peak. And I feel like that just goes into it.
So let me ask you this, because I had years ago, I had a client and I was helping them with their employee handbook. And this is the first time I've ever seen this. The client, I was redoing their old one.
Okay.
And, you know, just putting some new information in the new one. But one thing he wanted me to do is to take out the dress code policy and just put a paragraph into that says, if you're smart enough to work, you're smart enough to know what to wear. And at first I'm like, that's going to get you in trouble. And I'm like, shit, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense, because it lets them choose for themselves what they feel is appropriate. And if you leave the onus on them, if you got the right people in the right positions doing the right jobs and they're motivated properly, they're going to make the right decisions when they put something on and come to work. So to me, that was the aha moment. And I'm like, whoa, I love that. versus other companies that says for female clothing that they need to have a skirt no more than 2 inches above the knee. And I'm like, you got to get that out of there. And they're like, but why, Ricky? We got to have some standards. So, yeah, who's going to measure? Right? Let me see you putting your hand on that girl's leg. Right. That's a bigger issue than the dress code violation.
And I think if we were to ask JC, I mean, he's not even wearing pants for this. So
every freaking episode, dude.
It's kind of wild, right?
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
You got the t-shirt on. You got the shirt. I can see that. But the mirror behind you, you forgot the mirror behind you.
It's all good. Weird.
It's fine.
Got to help sell the product, man. It's all good, you know. Promote the product.
I can't wait to come back on the show, to be honest with you. You get my contacts next time so there's no glare.
And Ricky, number 35 on the list, the last one I'm going to read because that is the last number on the list. So many items here on how to increase employee engagement. Once again, this was written by Robin over at techfunnel.com, dated as of the 15th.
Well done, Robin.
Check it out. Great job, Robin. Yes, absolutely. Ricky, number 35, have a potluck lunch on Thursday or Friday. Best way to increase employee engagement, number 35. What are your thoughts?
If they want to.
No, they're saying you have to. If you do this, you will improve employee engagement.
I'll say no. I'll say no.
Why?
Isn't that called forced fun? Nobody wants to do potluck. Everybody hates cooking. It doesn't say, left or right.
Okay, she's not saying in the article that you have to do it, but I'm saying on her list here of things that you should consider, it is a good way to increase employee engagement. Potluck lunches Thursday or Friday.
It is. It gives the team the opportunity to show off their culinary skills if that's something they're good at. It gives the opportunity for the entire team to taste something from a different part of the world if somebody specializes in foreign cuisines. All those things are great, but if nobody wants to do it, right? Are you going to force them?
Or it gives you a great opportunity to have the goulash with the golden retriever hair. Made by Karen. You know what I'm talking about. Like, you got to be careful with these things, man.
If I could step in for 1 second.
Yes, sir.
I was going more towards no. And then I remembered, I forget which book it's from, but the conversation about the coach of the San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich.
Yes.
And how he created a culture around food because he was passionate about food and wine. And so the meals after the games on the road were such a huge part of the Spurs culture. And I'm thinking about me as a leader and maybe I'm biased because I am a little zesty about food. And this idea of like breaking bread together when it comes to engage, I agree. It could get sketchy. How much is too much?
Mm-hmm.
What does forced involvement start to look like?
Right.
But like, you know, somebody who's from a different and they bring their favorite dish that their mother made, that their grandmother taught them, and I can share that experience with this woman who's 20 years older than me and I can barely understand her because her accent's so heavy, and now I can taste something that she poured love and passion into.
Awesome.
As a manager, as a peer, like, wow. Like, now we're making a connection that otherwise might never have happened.
Quick little story. 15 years ago, Robin, spot on. About 15 years ago, I was working for Orange County government, and we had a forced potluck. And this one guy, he lived in Israel for 30 years, then moved over here. I forgot the name of this dish. It's these like potato pancakes. It's like these pancake looking things. I forgot what it was called. Flox, something like that. Freaking phenomenal! I never knew those things existed. And I'm like, what the? So I'm eating like 8 of those. And he's like, Rick, you're supposed to have 3. I'm like, well, whatever, dude. So, I mean, look, I'm a husky kid, right?
Why'd you make them so good?
Right? It's your freaking fault, right? No, but I mean, I connected with them, right? Because otherwise I would never have experienced that type of cuisine anywhere else unless I've actually go to Israel and order it. But yes, I am able. People are able to experience other parts of the world through food, that's one of the best ways to do so when you're not traveling. Is that it, JC? Do you have like 8,000 more? Or
No, that was their article.
That
right
was actually
there.
A lot of fun.
I have
Robin.
I do have a fantastic clip that we have to play at this point, though. Please stand by for a sample from Josh Snyder's experience, the Josh Snyder Experience, episode 4.
We have the best players in the world this tournament. Playing the biggest tournament in the world. They have already played thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of soccer. Yet they are still warming up for today's game. Yet, like, nobody warms up for work. Warm up, I get my coffee.
All right, so in the clip there, in the Josh Snyder Experience, he's chilling on the couch. He's got his cereal for the morning, I think, in his hand, maybe a porridge or something. I don't know. The sun
gluten-free.
Is there. It is
gluten-free porridge.
Gluten-free porridge. The sun is casting in gently through the screen door, off camera that we can't see, or maybe a huge bay window. And in this moment, he's talking about that soccer team and how they're getting ready for the... Break this clip down for us, Josh, if you could.
That was good, actually. Sometimes I read my first book and I'm like, what happened in the last 6 years? Because this is good and you haven't thought about this in 6 years. That was good. What did I mean? Yeah, it's... You look at these professional athletes who are the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, freaks of nature.
Right, right.
Yet when it's game time, let's not even talk about the fact that they have coaches and have practices. When it's game time, they warm up. They pass the ball in warm up. Like, you've passed the ball 700,000 times in your career, yet you're gonna obviously, yes, nobody's practicing opening Outlook in the morning. Like, I don't need to open Outlook more efficiently, but the muscle of doing some of the most important things at work. I mean, how few people take even 5 minutes to meditate or 5 minutes to do. When I'm on my game, I've got an 8-minute morning breathing thing, and it's unbelievable. It's almost too powerful. I don't go to it. And man, if we could prime ourselves a little bit better, it makes me sick to my stomach when it's Monday morning and people are like, oh, it's Monday, or when I'm in an early meeting and people are like, I haven't had enough coffee yet. I'm like, I couldn't imagine making that joke. Like, I punched in. I showed up. And granted, that's part of being a consultant, right? But like, I walked through the door. It's go time.
I'm not warming up the pen here. It's right? ready to go.
Yeah. Right. No, yeah. I love it. I love it. It's how do you become more efficient in Outlook? You open and close it, open and close. I'm going to try that tomorrow. I'm going to open and close it for 8 minutes.
Control Q.
What's Ricky doing? What's Ricky? He's getting ready.
He's warming ready. Up. What's he doing?
Control Q. Apple.
X-Line. Widow X-Line. Key. Open. X-Line.
Control Delete. Control Delete. I'm going to type out my password 20 times before I get out of bed this morning.
I need to, because whenever I go on vacation and come back, I forget it. So I'm like, shit, what's my password again?
IAMTHEMAN 4444 exclamation point. IAMTHEMAN 4444 exclamation point.
I'm going to use that now. That's great.
So many people are going to try to hack joshsnyder.com today with that password.
I know, right? You know?
The he's overnight like, look, 2 in the
he's
morning.
He's laughing, but he's writing down. Change the password after the show.
Leah, change the password. Change all the passwords. in the Google Doc named Yoga Routine. Change them all.
All right, Ricky, I'm going to open the floor routine. To you. To,
where did it come from?
Yeah, no, from a warm cockle of your heart. Ricky, I'd like to open the floor to you for any questions you have of Josh before we segue directly into some of our current event topics for the day, please.
No, actually, what the questions I have for Josh, he already answered them. And I was really curious of his thought process, which you did a good job in articulating what it is. And I really like how calculated you are in your communication, in your responses. And I don't know if anybody has given you that feedback before, because anybody we've had before, it's boom, spitfire, spitfire. You pause, and that gives everybody the cue. Okay, he's really trying to articulate what he needs to communicate to me. And correct me if I'm wrong, not just to make sure, not for you to make sure it's coming out properly, but you're trying to make sure that what we are receiving from you is received and understood in the same manner that you tried to convey it in the first place.
I mean, that, and I read four things you're supposed to do on a podcast interview, and number two said pause. It's on Safari right here. Here, I can show you.
I'm glad you prepped. I'm glad he prepped for this show.
I love it.
So hold on. So do you do like team building events, like destination team building events, not necessarily like at the office, but you go golfing or you guys go bowling? Do you go to team building events outside of the office?
Like, do I conduct them, or like, do I love bowling? If you want to be friends, I'm going to be in Orlando in 2 weeks. We could be friends.
Bro, or come on over, man. Come on over. I know a lot of bowling alleys. They got $2 beers, and that is awesome here. Awesome.
Perfect.
No, I'm just wondering, what is your go-to team building venue?
I feel like it's a little cliche, but I have been loving the escape rooms where I get to watch. So I am not in the room. I'm in the back room with the cameras, with the dude, where I can ask him. And it's like, you can see when people are close and how they interact, and you can hear, and then kind of like unpacking that a little bit. And I'm sure it's a little trendy, or maybe it's even past, but it's like, we need a little stress and pressure to let that trueness come out. You know, I really enjoy that. And I do believe there is something about breaking bread. And even for me, and I'm not even saying having drinks together, but like even sharing a bottle of wine, like having something that's important. And if we can get to this point where I'm sharing a little bit about me, I'm sharing a little bit about my family, and you know, not just that casual way. And so like a company coming up, we're doing their values, and you know, new leadership, and they want to establish these values, and they're like, got to come in that night before, do dinner and just hang out and have some drinks, wake up, and then let's get into this session. And hopefully not too many drinks, but
well, I mean, hopefully so. But so one quick question for you then, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being really important, 1 being not even exist. It's non-existent. Here he goes. He's dropping again. He's like, he's afraid of this question. No. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you, I really wish we were videotaping this. I really do. When it comes to a leader to be influential, how important it is that leader being vulnerable? Vulnerability. How important is that?
I can't say it's like the most important thing, because I'm sure it's not. But if I were Brené Brown and it was my book that was coming out, then I would tell you it's the most important thing. It's like, I mean, it's cliche, but the Emperor's New Clothes, you know, and you sit in these meetings and you see these managers or directors trying to throw air cover on things that, because you're in the weeds, you just know they don't know. Yeah. And by them trying to make up or cover like something, you just lose so much credibility for that person, whether you report to them or not. And it's like, that's where I think sometimes, I mean, there's the vulnerability of like, oh, we got so much work, I don't know. And you're like, well, that's kind of on you to at least know the scope of where you're at. But
right.
And then to share those micro stories with people on your team. Yeah, man, I remember where there I was. And I honestly love, I don't share it from the stage, but I mean, a little over 4 years ago, I was $100,000 in debt, barely making enough money to keep the lights on in my in-laws' basement. And I guess actually they had that covered, but
I'm sorry.
I was like, I thought that was going to be funny, but
I love how Ricky,
took me a minute.
Ricky actually instituted the pause he was talking about into his laughter too. That was great.
It's awesome though. It's
I've like, never
I'm
said
barely
that.
Able to keep the lights on in my basement. Well, they take care of that. Sorry, dude. I don't mean to laugh at your demise. No. I'm sorry, bro.
I've never said a joke. I've never said that joke before. Like that was like that. Just you guys brought. You two brought that out of me. So well done. That's on awesome. That one's on you too. But yeah, like I love when I can share that with somebody who's starting out or who's struggling. It's like, I'm like, listen, there was a day I wanted to cope with my stress to go get a Tim Hortons breakfast sandwich. And I literally, all my credit cards were shut off. I did not have enough change or money in the bank to get a $2.12 with tax breakfast sandwich. That's a tough spot to be.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it is. But you telling that story, though, right now,
right,
showing your vulnerability, when people hear that, where you came from and where you are right now, that inspires people. That's you sparking that fire right
yes.
there.
And so, it's built an empathy. It builds an empathy yep. for that person, too. Like when you walk through something, you can understand. I would have never asked for that experience. I am so grateful that we had those challenging years because I get what it's like for somebody who's making $52,000 a year with three kids, feels stuck, doesn't have enough money to pay their bills. And so here comes this speaker that says, get motivated and get fired up. And they're like, bro, you don't even understand my life.
There you go.
And so not that I can answer all, but like I'm able to come from a place of how can I truly help this person elevate who they are, get control, get traction. If they get traction, they get momentum. If they get momentum, they can get some wins. And who knows where they can be in 3 to 10 years.
And then you get the wins, and then the trust continues to build, and then the people around you become inspired, and then they flock to you, and then they network with you, and then they take over your network, and then they push you out, and then they like completely eliminate you from the procedure altogether, and they take over your life, start
JC,
like going
JC,
to your
back,
family
come back,
picnics
come back, relax.
Instead.
Relax.
You know?
Is this the pursuit of happiness?
Right? I mean, at some point, though, I mean, let's be honest. At some point, the Pollyanna vision and fantasy does have to come to a head to where you defend yourself at the same time, where you're standing up for yourself and your own values in that process, though, too, yeah. Right?
I was just going to, like, maybe they'll think it froze.
No, because she blinked. It's okay. I was looking.
Dang it.
I was looking.
Yeah. You know, I'm the path you laid out is extreme. Can we cut this out?
No, you're good. You're good, man. You're good.
Ricky, this is for you too, Rick.
Maybe I like blacked out for a second, but I got lost in your words.
It's okay. It's okay. It happens many times.
I don't want to combat you.
So Ricky,
if there isn't a Hallmark card. There it is.
So Ricky, over to you then. Let me put this at you and Josh will chime in. I guarantee.
You guys. Sorry.
No,
Mike
must
have turned off during my response. Sorry, guys.
Oh, it's okay.
Oh,
no problem.
It's okay. We're good.
So
yeah, we're good.
So at what point through the compassion, the caring, the growth, the empathy, the engagement, at what point do you start to stand up for yourself and defend yourself more in tough situations, Rick?
I get it now.
Okay, go Josh ahead, is back. Either one of you.
I don't think I do. I don't think I get it. I'm trying to make sure I understand the question. Defend yourself from what?
All right, Josh, help me explain it because you get it now.
I mean, you're saying as far as like me being a vulnerable, empathetic person.
Yes.
And that if I do that, people will feel like they could tread over me.
And then they take advantage of you and maybe that boss that is willing to kick the door in and come in and drop those F-bombs. And at some point you have to defend yourself though, too. You have to stand up for yourself, correct?
Yes. Okay, I see where we – yes.
Now I see it, yes.
And yeah. So – yeah, and that's where like – I mean, as a leader, you have to be empathetic. But does that empathy give you the credibility – like I heard my dad say the F word I think one time my whole life. And when he did, it carried a bit of weight. And so mm-hmm. when you're not throwing it around all the time, it being whatever, your position, your weight, your whatever – because you've earned, like, you know, a lot of us, we think about, like, you got to make these deposits in the piggy bank. So mm-hmm. when you go to cash a check, there's enough there. And so, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would always err on the side of trying to be more empathetic because I feel like, I mean, if you piss me off, like, I can get there fast. Yeah. I'd rather just have a little bit of runway to land if I needed to.
And we know this already because Steak Knives Tires, 14th floor. It's okay. we are staying in your good graces. Trust
yes,
me.
Yes, yes, Mr. Schneider.
All right, so Rick, come on. What do you got on this one?
So it's. I'm going to take it back a little bit because now I understand the question. And to me, I'm a big believer in you train and teach people how to treat and talk to you. And if you are open, you're transparent, and you're honest, and you address issues right on the spot, openly, genuinely, then you don't have to defend yourself as much as if you was hiding behind the empathy.
Okay, Rick, here it comes. You're ready for – I'll go specific with you. I'll give you a real clear example. Mm-hmm. You are sitting at your desk in your office, and the CEO comes in. And he just starts asking you a casual question about whatever in the world, doesn't matter what it is. And during the discussion, towards the front of the end of the discussion, you stand up. You're standing. The CEO is standing. And now the discussion is taking place at eye level.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of the discussion, the comment is made to you, no, please sit down. In your office.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, no, I'm good. Thank you, though. No, mm-hmm. You were maybe trained or find it more appropriate when you have a conversation with someone to stand. You're in your space. You're having a casual discussion about whatever it may be. After you decline to sit, it's fired back at you again. No, mm-hmm. sit down.
Okay.
Where are you at?
So before the CEO gets to ask me again to actually sit down, what I was, Josh, what I would say is this is just me, right? I would let them know why I'm standing. Hey, you know what? No, it's cool. I'm standing up. I feel more comfortable this way. If this makes you feel uncomfortable, let me know. But this is what you're asking me. This is how I process. So if it's okay with you, I would like to stand. 9 times out of 10, that's going to turn out pretty good. Now, if he says, no, I'm sorry, you're making me nervous, please sit down. Roger that, because I don't want you being nervous to get in the way of us getting further along in this conversation or discussion.
So does physical posture, when we're talking about the overall enhancement of the emotive presence of an employee and the emotional touch point of where an employee resides, does physical presence really play that much of a role into the dominance factor and into everything else? Or is it something that as we become more humanly connected and more casual and more connected in the sense of just being regular people that understand each other along the way, do things of this nature, who sits, who stands, who goes through the door first, et cetera, does that start to fall out the window a little bit?
Not to me, because it's no. So I'll answer the first question you had is does physical posture has any place in there? It definitely does, because you have to pay attention to people's body language and nonverbal cues to see how you need to redirect your conversation, because you've got to keep your finger on that pulse. So for example, one of the biggest indicators that people are upset or they just checked out is when they're folding their hands with this look, right? But that depends on the person, right? Because when I'm really paying attention, I'm like, okay, so talk to me. I'm more comfortable this way. So yes, they see my arms folded, but they see that my chin is up. I'm listening intently. So it's all about communicating what your intentions in the absence of verbal cues. So yes, taking a class or reading a book on body language, crucial. Taking a class or reading a book on emotional intelligence, even more crucial, especially if you're dealing with people. So yes, it has a huge impact and it does have a place in the office.
But do you find it standing up for yourself if you do choose and desire to speak to people at eye level and stand and have good conversations one-on-one? Doesn't matter how deep or detailed it is, but if it's not one of those supervisory / subordinate discussions and you prefer standing because they're standing, should it be a concern? Should you have to back down and abide and take the seat and do as you're told?
If I see that it's going to get in the way of us progressing in the conversation, yeah, I would. Because how big is my ego that I'm going to say, no, CEO, I'm going to stay standing? No, I'm trying to help you here. And
so
if
the first
this
question
is the way
as it comes to you, yeah, when it's posed to you the first time, it's not a big deal. And you're like, I'm just going to stand. Don't worry about it. So what you were saying was blah, blah, blah. No, really, sit down. That changes the tone. And that changes the discussion altogether. You go from having a casual banter and something that might be inquisitive into maybe you now will sit, but you're going to shut down a bit.
Yeah, correct.
You're going to tune out.
Correct. But you manage that conversation though, right? You control what you
but
can
do
control.
In that situation, I don't think you do.
It depends.
I think you can.
If I explain to the CEO why I'm standing and he or she understands the reason why I'm standing, no harm, no foul.
Right, but now, they repeat to you, no, sit down, meaning comply. You comply.
I will do it. Seriously, I will do it. Because what's the point? What's the point of me challenging that CEO? At the end of the day, they're in charge, right? So they come to my office. They come to me for advice. They're upset. They're pissed off. At the end of the day, I don't run the company. They do. I'm the consigliere. I'm the advisor. I want to get to the solution of this issue as quickly as possible. I'm not going to let my ego get in the way.
All right. Now you're sitting. Now you complied. You're back down. Are you a little heated on the inside about the way that exchange went? Or do you just let it go?
I won't be heated. I'll let it go, but I can surely understand how somebody who has thinner skin, they wouldn't let it go. I would understand that. I got thick skin, brother.
All right, so take the thickness of the skin out of it, and let's change the scenario a little bit.
Okay.
You walk into a room, and you're not welcomed, and you're asked to leave, something of that nature. It's kind of the same way. Situations where things are told to you to simply comply.
Am I a leader or am I a regular employee?
Break it down both ways.
All right. If I'm a regular employee, oh, shit, sorry, later. If I'm a leader, I'm like, oh, well, I'm sorry, what's going on? I'll leave, but why do I have to leave? I'm just curious. Just to find out what's going on. I'm not going to be pissed, but now, if I wasn't interested before, now I really am. What's going on that you don't want me around? And just tell me, well, we're talking about different things, surprise. Okay, cool. I'll see you later. Bye. I'm done.
I've got an alternative for you. Okay. You just unbutton that shirt, bring it open, and right across the chest it says core business. You turn your back and go do your freaking job, and you shut your mouth and stop being so emotional. You just go work. Just go work. That never happened. And get your Tim Hortons because you can afford it now.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why Josh
in my backpack.
Well, I'm saying that's how Josh makes a lot of money. There you go, right there, because of JC pissing people off at work.
My next keynote: why core business is killing your business.
There it is. That's a good one, right?
But here's what you do, and then you rip open your shirt and show up your fresh tattoo that says core business. There you go. But I mean a real tattoo. You got to do it, man. We need to videotape that. We should be good. All right. What else you got, JC? Throw them at me. Come on.
All right. This is from bdcnetwork.com. Title of the article here. This was published on January 14th by John Caulfield, senior editor, in the office building design section of their website. Building design and construction, bdcnnetwork.com. Title of the article: the workplace should be a tool for improving employee engagement. So we're talking about using the actual workplace as that tool. It states here, employees place more value on physical elements that support well-being and convenience, such as natural light, views of the outdoors, and food, than on service amenities like fitness centers and on-site childcare. That's one of the findings of a new survey that examines how workplace experience can boost employee engagement. CBRE's Workplace Practice analyzed responses from more than 1,600 employees in the United States and Canada to gauge aspects of the work environment that impact their employee experience. Future Workplace, an HR advisory research firm, conducted the survey in partnership with View Incorporated, a technology company that focuses on creating smart and connected buildings. They sent the survey to employees of all ages, ranging from Gen Zers, Millennials, Gen Xers, to Baby Boomers, and even the Silent Generation, which provided less than 1% of the responses. There was only marginal generational variation in workplace dissatisfaction levels. Indeed, the majority of those polled, 71%, report feeling involved in and enthusiastic about their work and organizations. More than half, 57%, said they would recommend their company to someone seeking work. But the survey wondered just how deep this enthusiasm is, especially when 51% of the respondents exhibit low engagement. So to that, you're building design and construction piece right here for the two of you. What are your thoughts on that survey right there?
I think we lost Josh. I think we lost him. Until he comes back, let me just, I'll just say this, right? I don't like those surveys. I don't, because it gives people a false idea of what needs to happen. If they see, oh, hey guys, I saw this survey that said I need to go ahead and put in a childcare center, right? So that's what I'm going to do. And then they go back to their office and they put in a childcare center and then nobody uses it. And then somebody says, hey, do we know how many of our employees are parents? And they do, and they run a report. Out of the 200 of their employees, two of them are parents. So now you put that in just to help out two employees.
I do like how they mentioned in here conveniences such as natural light, views of the outdoors, and food are high up on the list compared to amenities like fitness centers or on-site childcare.
Can I have air?
Windows help. Windows help. Natural
it
light
really
helps.
Does. It
you
really
know,
does.
Since we did lose Josh here at the end of the call, I'll just I'll call it a day with the remaining main articles. I'll wrap it up for you with a fantastic story from Florida. Chicago Bears linebacker Khalil Mack. He went to his hometown of Fort Pierce and stopped by a Walmart store in December. He paid off all the layaways to the tune of $80,000, according to a Chicago Tribune article. That's a fantastic Florida story for you, folks. Ricky, what are some of the best ways people could, since we did lose Josh, what are
we
some
did.
Of the best
we
ways
lost him,
that,
dude.
What are some of the best ways that people could get in touch with Josh Schneider? What's that website, please?
For with Josh Schneider, actually, you can go on LinkedIn. You'll be able to find him on the website. Oh, hold on. He's coming back in. He's coming back in. Hold on a second. Hey, Josh. What happened, bud?
I had to order Grubhub. I was getting so hungry.
I know. Actually, I was just telling JC, I'm like, dude, we lost him. And I'm late for the airport anyway. So, okay. Yeah, we were just about wrapping up here. What'd you order? I'm curious.
I didn't. It just joke.
All right. So with that being
really
said,
curious.
With that being said, Josh, if we could please have some of your final thoughts and best ways people could reach you, please.
So best way, I love to be on LinkedIn articles, joshschneider.com. If you want a free copy of my latest book, go to employeebrain.com. But I know that we had a good time, but this is how there was some tough questions and I liked it because it's real. And man.
You did good, bro.
Answers are not binary. There's no one approach. Like, so I had a good time. I laughed. I actually stepped back into the room that I was in, and I was like, man, I've been sweating in here. Like, it smells like a man has been sweating in this room because the questions have been tough. So I love it. I appreciate it. JC, Ricky, it's been a lot of fun.
No, hey, you are always welcome back. Yes. It was awesome. Are you really going to be in Orlando in the next couple of weeks?
I am.
Dude.
Well, I guess it's, yeah.
I'll tell you what, let's leave that off to the side. Let's take this offline and let's get a message going back and forth so that we can get everyone in touch. If you're going to be down in that Central Florida area, Josh, Ricky will certainly make sure that you know, you guys get up for a beer or something. I'm going to put that on here, Rick. Deal?
Sweet.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Deal. I would love to catch up. So, let's awesome. Do it.
And Ricky, some of the final thoughts and best ways people could reach you, sir.
Look, it's at the end of the day, it's this is one of the topics that's near and dear to my heart, how to help people find their passion, how to help people find their own personal happiness at work. And it's to me, I know we've been doing this for a couple of hours. It felt like 15 minutes. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. So to get a hold of us, it's we're at 407-501-8425. You can text us. You can email us at HRTalk@Biasco. We are on all the social media platforms. Also, JC. JC is going to be in town next week in Orlando because we're going to be in Disrupt HR Gainesville. The HR Talk podcast will be live from the, what was it? Something Brewing? Oh, man, it's skipping my head. Anyway, we're going to be in Gainesville. I'll send it out. And also,
First Magnitude Brewing Company in the heart of downtown Gainesville for Disrupt HR 2.0 Gainesville. Stop by. Grab your tickets online. Very cost effective. Great speaker list. Very big things.
Awesome stuff.
Good things happening.
And drinks.
And drinks.
Yeah, so, the first so that's drink on Wednesday.
Is on the house.
The house. And that is on Wednesday, January 22nd. 2 days later, we're going to be doing our very first monthly free webinar with Biasco Learning and HR Talk with Wendy, the HR lady, Sellers. It's going to be called Recruiting for the Future, How to Attract Talent in 2020 and Beyond. It is at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you go on the Biasco.com or the HRTalkPodcast.com website, go ahead and click on Biasco Learning Classes, and you can sign up for free. So make sure you do that. And also, really quick, I know last episode we joked around about the donations to help the face. Yeah, we were joking, but the donations, it's there. We're just kidding. If you don't have to put $20,000 or $10,000 unless you really do want to do so.
Listen,
okay.
here's one of the things, ladies and gentlemen. If you do choose to donate to the program, okay, Ricky's going to keep a spreadsheet going. So if you give $3 today to help sponsor a discount meat purchase for the face of the franchise, and then next month you can give like $9 more, and that gets you to the fast food meal selector to help sponsor the face, that will compound within a spreadsheet that he will maintain. So for those that do choose to contribute and donate, it's not a one and done. This grows over the span of time. And as time goes by, you will then be listed as a producer of the program with your name read on air, as an executive producer as the program, and then keep these things moving forward. So these will compound, and we will have that list aggregated. And I guarantee as the show grows and moves forward, as you become listed as a producer or as executive producer, your name and everything, it'll be within the credits of the program as we publish that and put that forward. So once again, it is a real thing.
Absolutely. And so it's a real thing. If you can do it, that'd be awesome. If not, it's awesome too. We just love what we do. We love the guests. We love bringing this to you guys. So thank you for the support. But by the way, the best way you can support us, give us a like. Give us some kind of a comment on where you subscribe to the podcast, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Player FM, Spotify, either or. Just let us know. We're greatly, greatly appreciated.
Had a great talk with a lady this week by the name of Brandy. She listened to a multitude of the shows, Rick. Never knew she listened before. She gave some very good, positive, critical feedback. Loved some of the guests and the interactions that take place. Thank you. For tuning in and listening and revealing offline in the real world that you listen. And please, anyone that heard this show today, reach out to Josh. Follow him on the social media.
Let him know.
You know, let him know as well. He's got a lot of stuff cooking. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the man, the myth, the legend, the undisputed world champion of the Great Lakes in the speaker circuit, Josh Schneider, and the guy that takes the teacup rides every week at Ricky Baez. My name's JC. It's been my pleasure to be here. Drive safe. Have a good night.
I also love It's a Small World.
Can I pay you guys to do this? Because this is probably cheaper than my therapist.